Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
I am very happy to be here with you tonight. Been looking forward to this for some time. It's good to be with you, and of course appreciate the congregation here and all of the members, and good to be with my friend Clay as well. And I can't help but think, whenever I think about this congregation and Clay, I always think about Don, because of the fact that he preached here, and Don is the one responsible for Clay and I becoming friends. And I remember a couple of years ago, I guess it was, when Don held a meeting out here, and we came one night, and he said something to the effect that if he were the Apostle Paul, that Clay would be Titus and I would be Timothy. And I was thinking about that on the way up here, and I thought to myself, if I were Andy Griffith, Clay would be Barney. And so appreciate Clay and his friendship. I knew you'd like that.
I knew you were going to say something silly.
Always do. In the beginning of Paul's second missionary journey, Acts chapter 16, Paul makes his way to the city of Philippi, and down by the water he finds a group that are praying, and among that group there is a woman by the name of Lydia, who's described as a seller of purple, and she obeys the gospel. Not long after, we read about a Philippian jailer and his family who obeyed the gospel. And so the church at Philippi was born. And as time would go on, the Apostle Paul would evidently develop a very strong bond, a strong relationship with the congregation in Philippi. And somewhere in the neighborhood of about 10 years after Acts chapter 16, around A.D. 60, 62, somewhere in that neighborhood, we get to the end of the book of Acts, and we find the Apostle Paul under house arrest in Rome. And it's during that time that he penned what the group of epistles that we commonly refer to as the prison epistles. And the book of Philippians, of course, is one of the epistles in that list. So I invite your attention to Philippians tonight, and as Clay mentioned, we're going to be talking about and sort of overviewing this book this evening. And I want to tell you at the outset that one of the reasons that I've been looking forward to being here so much is because Philippians is one of my favorite books, and this is one of my favorite lessons to deliver. And so I'm glad for the opportunity to be able to do it. Now, what I'd like for us to do this evening, as time will allow, as I'd like for us to start at the beginning of the book and work our way through the book. And as we do that, I'd like for us to notice together a title or a main idea for each chapter. And we'll talk about how that idea is developed in that chapter. And then we will point out a lesson or two from the context of each chapter as we go along through the book, time permitting. But before we begin working our way through the book, I do want to just mention a couple of more things by way of introduction. Of course, you're probably familiar with the fact that Philippians is a book about joy. And the word joy, or rejoicing, some derivative of the word joy, appears some 16 times in four chapters. The Bible, of course, has a great deal to say about joy. One of my favorite passages, actually, about joy is in 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 3 and following, where Peter talks about this joy unspeakable and full of glory. That is a reality for Christians. That is a reality for those who have been washed in the blood of the Lamb. And so as we study the book of Philippians, we think about the circumstances, the personal circumstances of the Apostle Paul. The fact that he found himself, again, in Roman custody, Roman incarceration, if you will. He found himself in a situation, as we will see in a moment in chapter 1, where there were those who were fighting against him, who were trying to add even more affliction, even more trouble to the difficulty that he was already enduring. And yet in all of those circumstances, Paul in the same epistle is able to say, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And he's able to say, I rejoice and I will continue to rejoice. And he tells the brethren in Philippi, you rejoice, even though they were undergoing some difficult circumstances as well. So this is a book about joy, and there's never a time in the life of a Christian where we do not need to be reminded about joy and what it is and how great it is that we are able to possess that. But it is also a book about unity. One of the interesting things about Philippians is the fact that unity, some reference to unity, is mentioned at least one time in every chapter. All four chapters have something to say about unity. And I want to suggest to you that the reason why that is the case is because it fits in so well with what I would suggest to you is actually the main idea of the book as a whole, or maybe the purpose passage or the purpose statement. And that's Philippians chapter 1, verse 27 and 28. Paul will say in Philippians 1, 27 and 28, only let your conversation be as it becometh the gospel of Christ, that whether I come and see you or else be absent, I may hear of your affairs, that you stand fast in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel, and in nothing terrified by your adversaries, which is to them an evident token of perdition, but to you of salvation, and that of God. You think just for a moment about the city of Philippi and the circumstances that these Christians found themselves in on a daily basis, and I think you can begin to see how Paul being in difficulty and the Philippian brethren also being in difficulty were able to relate with one another so well, and why Paul was able to say, I am rejoicing in all things and I am telling you to rejoice in all things. Philippi was a Roman colony, and as such, it was essentially a little Rome away from Rome. It was a retirement community for Roman generals and military officials. And because of that, as you might expect, it was a city that was incredibly patriotic. Think about it like this. We get together on Friday nights and we go watch a high school football game. And every time we get together for a high school football game, the first thing that happens is that the band plays the national anthem. We stand up and we observe a moment of silence. I guess maybe we still do that. I'm not sure. I haven't been to a high school game in a while. But we sing the national anthem and we give honor to our country. Well, in Philippi and throughout the Roman Empire, every time they got together for some sort of event, they stood up and they didn't sing a national anthem. They pledged their allegiance to Caesar, who was to be revered as a god, who was to be revered and to be referred to as Lord. Well, naturally, this puts New Testament Christians in a very difficult situation. Because they cannot, they will not, they must not stand up and say Caesar is Lord, because there's only one Lord, and that's Jesus Christ. And as they're living in this city and in this community, there are those who are around them, and they would see this going on. They would see that this person, this citizen of Rome, of this Roman colony, they're not acting like a Roman citizen is supposed to act. Why? And that would, of course, cause problems for them. So in Philippians 1, verse 27 and 28, Paul talks about citizenship. He talks about our manner of life. And I would suggest to you that the overall thrust, the main idea of Philippians, it's not necessarily joy, and it's not even unity. Those two things are byproducts. The main idea of the book is you stand firm together for the cause of the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's the main idea. Now let's see if we can unpack that a little bit as we work our way through. We'll go back to chapter 1, 27 and 28 in just a minute. We look at Philippians chapter 1, and I will title this chapter, The Single Mind. Philippians chapter 1, The Single Mind. Now, we're not going to read all of these passages, but I want you to follow along with me, and I want you to see if you can, if you notice something that jumps out at you. Look at Philippians 1 and verse number 5. For your fellowship in the gospel. Look at Philippians 1 and verse number 7. In the defense and confirmation of the gospel. Look at Philippians 1 and verse number 12. The furtherance of the gospel. Look at verse 14. They are bold to speak the word without fear. Verse 15. Some indeed preach Christ. Verse 16. The one preach Christ. Verse 17. I am set for the defense of the gospel. Verse 18. Christ is preached. And then we get to the last couple of verses of the chapter, the gospel of Christ, verse number 27, and the end of the verse, stand together for the faith of the gospel. In the first half, really, actually throughout the entirety of this chapter, the gospel is referenced 11 times at least. What do you think that this chapter is all about? It's about the gospel. And this chapter begins in verses 3 to 11 with Paul's prayer of thanksgiving for these brethren and their fellowship with him in the gospel. This is a congregation that had supported the Apostle Paul. They had prayed for the Apostle Paul. They had evidently even sent Epaphroditus and perhaps others to help the Apostle Paul in his work as a gospel preacher. So he thanks them for their fellowship in the gospel. But then, that goes all the way down through verse number 11. And then when we get to verse 12 to 26, Paul talks about his own circumstances, his own situation as a prisoner of the gospel of Christ. And one of the most incredible passages in this book, at least to my mind, is found here in this section where he says, beginning in verse number 12, I want you to understand that the things that have happened to me, what things had happened to Paul? Go back and read the book of Acts, beginning in about Acts chapter 20. Read all the way through the end of the book and notice how Paul is shuffled from place to place and from government official to government official. Notice how he has a very difficult journey to make his way from Jerusalem to Rome and then stays in Rome under house arrest for a number of months by the time that he writes this epistle. That's what Paul's talking about when he says, the things that have happened to me. And what does he say about them? He says, they have fallen out rather unto the furtherance of the gospel. You think about that just for a minute. Most human beings, most Christians, I should say, will not have to endure even a fraction of the kind of things that Paul had to endure. And yet here is a man who is saying, the gospel is so important to me that I want you to know that, you know what, having to go before Felix, having to go before Festus, almost losing my life in Jerusalem, having to wait a number of months to be taken over to Rome, enduring shipwreck, being bitten by a serpent, all of these things that I have gone through, they don't matter to me because what really matters to me is the progress, the furtherance of the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's why we're calling this chapter The Single Mind, because Paul had a singular focus in his mind. The gospel was the thing that was most important. He even goes on in this section, and he talks about how, verse 14, those bonds, those things that he had endured, those things served as motivators. They motivated other brethren, verse 14. Even though there were some, verse 15 and following, who were preaching Christ with an insincere motive, trying to add difficulty to Paul's already difficult situation, Paul said, doesn't matter to me. I'm going to rejoice. And why? Because Christ is preached. the gospel is proclaimed. The gospel, the gospel, the gospel, over and over and over again. I am thankful that you've helped me in the gospel. I am thankful that I've been able to help further the gospel. I am thankful that there are those preaching the gospel, even if they're doing it for the wrong reasons. And now we get to verse number 27 through the end of the chapter, verse number 30, where Paul then talks about his desire for them. And what do you suppose it is? Paul wants them to have the same singular focus, the same single mind, if you will, that he describes in himself in verse 12 all the way down through verse 26. Look at the word only at the beginning of verse number 27. The word only in the Greek New Testament is emphatic. It's very powerful. And literally translated here, it would go something like this. Only one thing. Or only or just one thing. There's an emphasis here. Only one thing. Just one thing I want you to have in your mind, Paul says. This is the thing that is most important. And here it is. Let your manner of life be worthy or as it becomes the gospel of Christ. Live in a way that is consistent with the gospel. But notice that when he uses the word conversation or manner of life, that word could also be translated citizenship. You remember in Philippians chapter 3, Paul will say in about verse number 21, our citizenship is where? Our citizenship is in heaven. And so Paul is using a play on words here. He's talking about citizenship because remember he's writing to a congregation made up of people who are Roman citizens. They know what it means to be a citizen, just like we do. We're citizens of the United States of America. That means you stand up and you take your hat off and you put your hand over your heart when you say the Pledge of Allegiance or when the national anthem's played. That means you shoot fireworks on the 4th of July, right? That means you have responsibilities. There are certain requirements that are contained within being a citizen of the United States of America. Same thing with Rome. But that ain't the point Paul's making. The point Paul's making is you're a citizen of the kingdom of heaven and there are certain responsibilities that come along with that, just like being a citizen of Rome or being a citizen of the United States of America. He says, I want you to live as citizens worthy of the gospel of Christ. He says this, I want you to stand fast. That phrase, stand fast, has the idea of firm commitment. Being firmly committed in your conviction. And then he says, I want you to stand fast in one spirit with one mind, striving together. Striving means literally contending side by side. And I want you to do this for the gospel. So the single mind, Philippians chapter 1. Paul said, my single focus in life is the proclamation, the progress of the gospel. What I want your single focus in life, I want you to always be thinking about the gospel and standing together as a united body in its defense and in its proclamation. Now, how does that apply practically to you and to me? Well, the question that we need to ask ourselves is this. Are we focused on the furtherance and the progress of the gospel in the way that Paul was and in the way that he wanted these Philippian brethren to be? Now, don't misunderstand what this is all about. Paul is not talking about the progress and furtherance of the gospel only from the standpoint of standing up and preaching it and teaching it. Paul is talking about every one of these Christians, every moment of every day of their lives. If we're going to be truly focused on the progress, the furtherance of the gospel, the work of God would be another way of saying that, then that thought is something that needs to be in our minds from the moment that we wake up and get out of our beds in the morning until we pillow our heads at night. We need to be thinking about how can we help the cause of Jesus Christ? What about in our interactions? And then we'll move on to the next chapter. What about in our interactions at work? What about in our interactions with our family members? What about in our interactions with people that we come into contact with just out in the general public on a daily basis? I'm going to tell a story on myself to illustrate the point. When Courtney and I first were married and we lived in Oklahoma, we had just, we were new there. And, you know, Oklahoma storms can come pretty quickly. And so we were out one evening and we needed to stop by Walmart to the pharmacy and pick up a prescription on our way back home. There was a big storm coming. And so I said, hey, let's go to the pharmacy. Let's get this prescription real quick so that we can get home before the storm gets here. She said, okay. So we go to Walmart and we're standing in line at the pharmacy, and the sweet lady that's working at the pharmacy counter could not possibly be going any slower. I mean, the storm could have come, unloaded, and then left before we got to the front of the pharmacy, or to the front of the line. And so I'm in line, and I'm impatient, and I'm getting irritated, and I'm getting irritated. I know that's hard for you to believe, but that does happen sometimes. And my wife is saying, you need to calm down. And I'm just, in my mind, I'm building this up. When I finally get up here, I'm going to let this lady know that it's ridiculous how long she's taking. So our turn finally gets up to the front of the line, and thankfully, before I could ever open my mouth, the lady that was working the counter said, oh, hi, Cody, I'm so glad to see you. And then she turned around to the pharmacist and called her name and said, this is our new preacher. And it turned out that the pharmacist, mom and dad, were also members of the congregation. Don't you think I was pretty happy that I kept my mouth shut? But what would have happened had I not kept my mouth shut and said something that would have been inappropriate? But you see, this is when I talk about the progress of the gospel. Even when you're standing in line getting irritated because of someone or something else, we have to keep in mind that people are always watching us. How are we going to react? How are we going to deal with difficulties like that? Because that's going to reflect on Christ. That's going to reflect on the church. And so we need to keep those things in mind when we think about being singularly focused. Look at chapter 2. Chapter 2, the submissive mind. The submissive mind. Now I want to do something here with you. I want to start reading again in verse number 27 of chapter 1 and read down through verse number 4 of chapter 2. Only let your conversation be as it becometh the gospel of Christ, that whether I come and see you or else be absent, I may hear of your affairs, that you stand fast in one spirit with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel, and in nothing terrified by your adversaries, which is to them an evident token of perdition, but to you of salvation and that of God. For unto you it is given in the behalf of Christ not only to believe on him, but also to suffer for his sake, having the same conflict which you saw in me and now hear to be in me, if there be therefore any consolation in Christ, if any comfort of love, any fellowship of the Spirit, any bowels of mercies, fulfill ye my joy that you be like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem other better than themselves. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. May I ask a question? What is the relationship of chapter 2, verses 1 to 4, to chapter 1, verse 27 and 28? Think about that just for a minute. If chapter 1, verse 27 and 28 really is the purpose of this book, then the rest of what follows is going to be tied into that in some way. Let me make a suggestion. Notice that in chapter 1, 27 and 28, Paul said, I want you to strive together with one mind and one spirit for the progress of the gospel. How can anybody be of one mind and be of one spirit and be unified if they're selfish and if they're self-seeking and if they're more interested in their own desires than in the desires and in the will of Christ and the needs of the gospel? So you notice in verse number 1 you have the word therefore. Paul is going to draw a conclusion based on the point previously made. And the point previously made is stand unified for the cause of the gospel. Well, since that's so important, this one thing is the one thing you need to be thinking about. Therefore, here's what needs to happen. You need to be like-minded, verse number 2. But you can't be like-minded, verse number 2, unless you fulfill verse 3 and 4. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than themselves. Look not every man on his own thing, but every man also on the things of others. That's selflessness. That's sacrifice. You see, if we're really going to be focused on the cause of Jesus Christ, that means that we're going to have to not be focused on ourselves. That's Philippians 2, verse 3 and 4. Now, here's where the submission comes in. As we go through the rest of this chapter, the Apostle Paul is going to lay out four examples to illustrate the point of verses 1 to 4. And first, and of course, most important, is the example of Jesus Christ Himself, verse 5, all the way down through verse number 11. Paul says of our Lord that He made Himself of no reputation and took upon Him the form of a servant and was made in the likeness of men. And being found in fashion as a man, He humbled Himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. Jesus knew that the will of God needed to be accomplished. Not my will, but yours be done. You remember, Jesus prayed in the garden just shortly before His death. Paul says of our Lord that He humbled Himself and that He became obedient. That is a direct correlation to what Paul is trying to emphasize in this epistle with these brethren. The second example is the example of the Apostle Paul himself. Verse 12 all the way down through verse number 18. And there is a passage here that has always been interesting to me in verse 17 where Paul will say, "Yes, and if I be offered upon the sacrifice and service of your faith, I joy and rejoice with you all." I always think here about 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 15 where Paul says, "I will gladly spend and be spent." And as I understand it, there are two different words that Paul uses there for spend and be spent. And one of them has to do with Paul literally emptying his pockets of every resource that he has at his disposal. I will literally give everything that I have. And then the other one has to do with his own life. I'll not only spend, give you whatever type, whatever money, whatever physical resources I have to help you, but his own life also, I'll be spent. I'll give you my time, my energy. I'll give you my life if that's what's necessary. This imagery in Philippians 2 and verse number 17 is that of the drink offering under the Old Testament law, and how the drink offering is poured out on top of the offering on the altar. And so Paul is literally saying, if it comes right down to it, I'll lay down my life for your benefit. That's how much he cared about them, and that's how much he cared about the furtherance and the progress of the gospel. Then there's the example of Timothy, verse 19 through 24. And I want you to key in with me on verse 20 and 21. Look at verse 20 and 21. Paul says, "For I have no man like-minded who will naturally care for your state, for all seek their own, not the things which are Jesus Christ's." That is simultaneously an incredible commendation of Timothy and a tragic statement about everyone else that was at Paul's disposal. Paul says, "I have nobody else like him. I have nobody like-minded." And look at the word care. I looked this word up a few months ago, and it was really interesting to me. The word Paul uses, here's the meaning of it. It means to monopolize the heart's concerns. To monopolize the heart's concerns. What's that telling us about Timothy? That's telling us that Paul had confidence in Timothy that he would literally allow his heart to be monopolized, overwhelmed with the care of the Philippian brethren. Remember, Paul is talking about the one thing, about being singularly focused in Philippians chapter 1. In Philippians 2, Paul says, you know what? Timothy, he is one that I know if I send him to take care of you, you will be his single focus. You will be the most important thing to him. He will do whatever has to be done in order to care for you. Why? Verse 21, because he's not selfish. All seek their own and not the things which are of Christ, but not Timothy. You know the proof of him, he says. You know that he's not that way. And notice the connection. We go all the way back to chapter 2, verse 3 and 4. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory. Look not every man on his own thing, but also on the things of others. Jesus fulfilled that. Paul fulfilled that. Timothy fulfilled that. And then also Epaphroditus, verse 25 to 30. Epaphroditus, one who came from Philippi, one who is described as a brother and a companion in labor and a fellow soldier. And the Apostle Paul says that he longed after you all, not because he was homesick, but because he was sick and he knew that they knew he was sick and he didn't want them worrying about his well-being. What do you think Epaphroditus wanted his brethren back in Philippi to be thinking about? Not him. Philippians 1 verse 27 and 28. He wanted them to be thinking about the fact that the cause of Jesus Christ, the furtherance of the gospel, the work of the kingdom, however you'd like to describe it, that's what you need to be focused on. So let me ask four questions now to make application of this chapter. As it pertains to the service of God, Christ left heaven. What are you willing to leave? Who are you willing to leave? What will you leave behind? What will you turn away from? Question number two. Paul was willing to spend and be spent. He was willing to empty himself and give everything that he had in order for the progress of the work of God. What are you willing to give? What are you willing to sacrifice in order that the work of God goes forward? Question number three, Timothy cared. Timothy cared so much that Paul used a word that meant the monopoly of your heart's concerns. He literally describes Timothy as someone who will allow himself to be completely immersed in thinking about the needs of these brethren. He cared. But how much do you care? How much do I care? How important is this for us? Question number four. Epaphroditus was willing to work himself to death. He was sick nigh unto death, the Apostle Paul says, because of the work of Christ. He was willing to work himself to death. How hard am I willing to work? How hard are we willing to work? What level of effort are we willing to put forth for the cause of Christ Jesus? Let's look at the last two chapters quickly. Philippians chapter 1, the single mind. Philippians chapter 2, the submissive mind. Philippians chapter 3, the spiritual mind. The spiritual mind. The spiritual mind is one that is not distracted by unspiritual forces that seek to distract it. You'll notice that in the first three verses of this chapter, you have a reference to dogs and evil workers and the concision. And so evidently, there were some Judaizers that were giving the brethren in Philippi problems. When I look at these three passages, here's what comes to my mind. Things that will distract my focus from what's most important. People who will distract my focus from what's most important. The things of the world that will cause me to turn my eyes away from Philippians 1, 27 and 28 and look at anything and everything else. As we go on through the chapter, you'll notice in verse 4 to 7 that this is where the Apostle Paul lists his credentials. And I would suggest to you the reason why he does that is because he wants these brethren to know, listen, these Judaizers, verses 1 to 3, that are trying to get you to listen to them, don't listen to them. Because I've been there, and I've done that, and I've got the t-shirt, and I know what they're talking about, and I know what they're selling, and I'm telling you that it's useless, and it's empty, and it won't get you anywhere. So then he'll go on and he'll say, verses 8 to 12, I've renounced all of this. It's worthless to me. And then in verses 13 and 14, he'll talk about what he's looking forward to in the future. I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus, he says in verse number 14. And then in verse 15 to 21, he says, now you do the same. You stay away from the things that are going to distract you, verses 1 to 3. You turn away from the things of the world. You turn away from the past. Leave the past behind you. Verses 4 all the way down through verse number 12. You focus on the future, on what's coming before you. Verse 13 and 14. And look at verse 17. Brethren, be followers together of me and mark them which walk so as you have us for an example. Which means you find somebody who is turning away from the past, looking forward to the future, and you follow them. Don't follow the people that we just talked about in verses 1, 2, and 3. You follow people who are doing what we talked about in verses 4 all the way down through verse number 16. That's what he's saying. The spiritual mind. The spiritual mind is one that has its priorities right. The spiritual mind is one that keeps pressing on. The spiritual mind is the one that longs for heaven and not the things of the earth. Spiritual mind puts first things first. So how is your mind? Is it spiritual or is it fleshly? Is it carnal? What means the most to you? Look at chapter 4. Chapter 4 is the secure mind. The secure mind. Single mind, submissive mind, spiritual mind, the secure mind. Chapter is divided into two parts. Verses 1 to 9, you have a set of final exhortations. And then verses 10 and following, you have Paul's thanksgiving and another statement about his personal circumstances. He ends the book very similarly to how he began. But I want you to notice with me a few things in verses 1 to 9. Sometimes when I preach this section, I like to just title it, Toward Spiritual Success. And the reason why is because if you look at the first 9 verses of Philippians chapter 4, it seems to me that what's happening is Paul is taking everything that he has described really from chapter 1 verse 27 all the way to the end of chapter 3, and he said, now look, if you want to accomplish these things, here's what you need to do. Here's how you can be successful. Are you ready? Here they are. There's 5. Number 1, be joyful. Be joyful. Paul will say, verse number 4, rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say, rejoice. Don't have time to look at this, but I would encourage you, when you study through and read through the book of Philippians, notice every time that the Apostle Paul commands joyfulness or rejoicing. And what you will find is that each time he commands that, it is commanded as a response to something that is mentioned in the immediate context of the command. Read through and see if you can find that. But in this passage, it seems to just be general. It's a general response. In everything, be joyful. Number 2, he says, be gentle. Look at verse 5. Let your moderation be known to all men. The Lord is at hand. Moderation, it's the idea of gentleness. It's the idea of being charitable. It's the idea of being merciful. Number 3, be prayerful. Notice in verse number 6, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. This is a passage that screams total dependence, total confidence in the God of heaven. Number 4, be thoughtful. Be thoughtful. Notice verse number 8. Whatever things are true and honest and just and pure and lovely and of good report and virtuous and praiseworthy, think on these things. Think on these things has to do with directing our minds, directing our attention toward them, dwelling on them, meditating on them. Be thoughtful. And then finally, number 5, be practical. Look at verse 9. Those things which you have both learned and received and heard and seen in me, do them. And the God of peace will be with you. I love this passage because it reminds me that the Apostle Paul practiced what he preached. But I want you to think about this. Paul begins by saying, those things. What are those things? Do you suppose it's the things that Paul has instructed, not just perhaps in this letter, perhaps at other times when he was with them in person, but certainly the things that he has commanded and encouraged throughout the book of Philippians up to this point. He says, you, these things that I have that you've learned of me, that you've received of me and heard of me, and notice this, and seen in me. You do these things. You listen to me and put these things into action. And what's the result? The God of peace will be with you. Our time is gone. We, very, very quick overview of this book. There's so much here and so many more things that could be said, but I do hope that some of these things were helpful. And I would encourage you, it won't take very long, go home tonight and sit down and read through this book in one sitting and think about some of these things that we've talked about and see if you can point some of them out as you think about and meditate on this great book. It's been great to be with you tonight, and again, I'm thankful for the opportunity. I'm going to offer the Lord's invitation tonight, and it may be that there's someone here that has a desire to become a Christian. It may be that there's someone here who is a Christian. And maybe as you think about your life and you think about the things that Paul talks about in the book of Philippians, the importance of having a single focus, the work of God, the importance of having a submissive mind, humble service, submissive to the will of God. Because we're not going to be focused on the Lord's work without being submissive. Maybe you think about your mindset, spirituality, the spiritual mind. Are you a spiritual person or a carnal person? Or maybe you're just thinking about the fact that you're trying every day, you're doing your best, but you feel like maybe you could do better. Maybe you've fallen short in some area. Maybe you're dealing with some discouragement and you need some encouragement. A pat on the back and a hug around the neck and some encouragement and some building up from the brethren so that, like Philippians chapter 4, you can go on and be successful. You can be secure. You can be faithful. And we offer the Lord's invitation, and if you have need, then come forward and let it be known while we stand and sing.